Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Right, Gary Breen, good morning to you. How you doing?
Good morning, I'm very well, thanks.
The lads there, Johnny obviously is a League of Ireland aficionado, so he reckons that there's no chance of Stephen Kenny ever going to three at the back. But stranger things have happened, have they?
Well, listen, I wouldn't necessarily rule it out. I think that what Stephen does is see what players are available and the best system that suits them. So if he feels it is the case, I know form and history suggests it wouldn't be that, but I wouldn't rule it out. I think he'll look at the group of players, who's available to him, who best serves the system and how they can be the most competitive they possibly can. So we'll see.
How valuable an asset is that particular set of qualities that John Egan would bring to that? The idea of almost moulding a defence based on the fact that your best defender plays in a back three. How big a factor is that for a manager and from a defensive standpoint?
I don't think that Stephen Kenny will look at it and just think because John Egan's excelling in a back three that he's going to change his whole ethos in terms of how he believes. And I think I agree with the lads there. I think John can play in a three. I think he can comfortably play in a two as well. And I know at times, if you're so used to playing in a particular system, it can take a little bit of time. But if there's one thing you learned about John Egan in terms of his rise throughout the leagues, is that every challenge that is put in front of him, he can deal with it. And Owen, obviously, you and I will be looking at his career ever since he started because of his famous dad as such. And of course, he was at Sunderland as a young player, so I'd have known much about him then. So I've been able to watch his career from a distance. I don't know him as such, but I've just been impressed with everything he does, every little step up that he makes initially to get over that dreadful injury that could be at a time when you're trying to make a name for yourself in football. It's such a pivotal moment in your career, but he battles back from then, works his way through the leagues. He was a brilliant player at Gillingham. I would have been coaching against him for Peterborough. Makes that step up to Brentford. And you think about Brentford in terms of how good they are at recruiting players and then selling them on. Then makes that move to Sheffield United. I think Brentford supporters certainly were thinking it was a sideways move, bearing in mind the struggles that Sheffield United were having. But he's proved them wrong. And look at him now excelling at the top half of the Premier League.
What are the differences between playing in a three and playing in a two?
Well, I think probably the most obvious one is look at someone like David Luiz. He can look all right in a back three because you've got people narrow to you. So you've got a bit of protection. And I think initially, if you look at John Egan, I maybe would have said, well, does he might find it difficult in the Premier League because of the fact that the strikers' movements are so much better. If you think about that early goal that Leicester got against them at the beginning of the season, Jamie Vardy, and he exposed John a little bit in that one 1v1 situation. It was a brilliant pass from midfield for Leicester. They break away, they punish you in a way that you don't get punished in the Championship. So you're thinking, okay, maybe if he's vulnerable in those situations in space, but he's so comfortable now in terms of those particular situations. Because if you think about that game against Tottenham recently, against Harry Kane, there were about four or five occasions Harry Kane just spins down the shoulder of him. The midfielder for Tottenham's got time and space to get his head up, make the pass. But John's angle of approach, the way he opens his body up, just negates the problem, steps across, takes the pass, or can make a challenge on Harry Kane's first touch. Those type of things suggest that he is a quick learner. And it's not out of context in terms of what he's done throughout his career and how quickly he has adjusted to every step up he's made.
I wonder, does that learning come from the journey he has been on, really? I mean, like coming through perhaps at an academy as a wunderkind, so to speak, perhaps there is a lot done for you that perhaps you don't need to figure out yourself. And given his circuitous route to the very top, having scored in all four divisions, John Egan's had to figure out quite a lot for himself.
Yeah, I think for a learning curve, and I agree 100% with you. I think for any young centre-half, even if you're at a top club now, I'd still want him to go out and play in the lower leagues to learn what it's like, to learn about the physicality of it, your decision-making, the fact that if you make a mistake, it costs you points, it costs people jobs, as opposed to playing in the kind of reserves leagues or whatever they call it these days, under-21s, I don't even know. I've no interest in it whatsoever. But I think his learning curve has been steep, and that's the reason why now, at his age, 27, I think it is, he has real maturity. Look at the number of games he's played as well. So the step up to the Premier League, which is the biggest one, the gulf between the Championship and the Premier League is vast. It really is. But he stepped up so well. And I think we've seen it at international level as well, because when he initially came into the team, I was covering it, commentating on him and playing in those early games for Ireland. And straight away, you thought, yeah, this is a player who can be comfortable. Listen, he still had a lot of mistakes in him, but you do in terms of coping with that level. But he just learns so quickly. I'm a massive fan of him. I mean, I could wax lyrical about him throughout what he achieved at Gillingham, Brentford, those type of things, getting in league teams of the year, not only captaining teams, but I just think he's the type of centre-half, if you were coming into the national team now, Stephen Kenny is, that you would be thinking, yeah, he's someone I can really rely on.
I've just looked it up there, 293 games. Now, they include everything. Yeah. So, but that's a phenomenal level of experience. And I remember we had Damien Camoli on the show a couple of years back, and he was talking about how it's impossible for clubs to find centre-backs now, because the point you made, the kids come through the academy and they're the ones that end up being trusted. They get thrust into the first team very young. They make mistakes, they lose confidence, and away they go. Yeah. So, like, at this stage of his career, he's 28 in October. Like, the sky's kind of the limit if you're a good centre-back who begins to get a reputation as somebody who can survive and thrive in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think they are few and far between. I genuinely believe that. And I think the reason why, Jerry, is that he has the capability to play in a footballing team. Listen, look how Sheffield United play. You've got centre-halves on the left-hand side, right-hand side, who more often than not are in right-wing, left-wing positions. So they do leave John on his own at times. I know Norwood will drop in and give him a little bit of protection. But they're expansive, Sheffield United, in a way that no one would have foreseen unless you'd seen them. I think some pundits, some journalists, media outlets are a bit lazy in terms of thinking that Sheffield United coming up from the Championship are just going to be a Route 1 footballing team. But they're not. They pass through the first. So he's a player who can do that. Then add to the fact that so many of these young centre-halves coming through the academies or big clubs, they're great stepping into midfield. They're great as that modern-day centre-half in terms of breaking lines with passes. But they really struggle in the air with the physicality. But he has both. He can deal with both. And that is something that's not... There's not that much of that available if you were looking out for centre-halves now.
Got 2 years left on his deal at Sheffield United, so it might not be beyond the bounds of possibility that somebody comes in from around about this time, or he gets a new contract around now from Sheffield United to make sure that that isn't something that happens. So things are looking up for him.
Yeah, they really are. And like I said, I don't particularly know him, but you learn about him in terms of where he's been at Sunderland, thought so highly of him. He's a great lad. You can see that in terms of... how well he's thought of by his teammates, certainly at Sheffield United. And I'm just delighted for him in terms of those dark moments in which was a really bad injury that he had. For him to come back, that type of mental strength aligned to that ability that he has. Because everyone's saying about, you know, is this player now because of the amount of games he's played, the experience? Ultimately, he's this type of player now because of his ability. He's a very good footballer.
Yeah, 100%. He's in Stephen Kenny's team. Stephen Kenny's already name-checked him. So if it is a four and it's a back four, who is Ireland's starting back four at the moment?
Well, it's a difficult one. It's still the kind of big debate at right back. I think Seamus Coleman, since the restart, has shown his real quality. He looks like he's got his energy back. I never really doubted him in terms of his qualities and in terms of his mental strength. I think Ender Stevens is your left back, so it pretty much is that, isn't it? I don't think it's too much of a wild thing to say that it will be the guys that we would think it probably be Coleman, Duffy, Egan, Stevens.
And all of a sudden, it looks really good.
Well, it does, and it's not just defensively, Jer, as well, that it looks good. I think there's options in centre midfield now that we probably haven't had it. I love the fact that James McCarthy is staying fit and healthy and playing so many games. You talk about, you know, Robbie Brady's had such a difficult season, only 5 Premier League starts, I think, so he needs to get over those injury problems. But we have options. You think about the centre-forward options now as well, and there's other players who are starting to come into the mix. We're talking about, obviously, Shane Long, a bit of a renaissance again at Southampton, so he'll come back into the mix, I think, more than he was under Mick McCarthy. You've got Obafemi, you've got Smallbone there as well, you've got Malumbi at Millwall's playing regularly. So I think there are lots of options, and it does bode well. I really do think time is everything in football. I genuinely believe that, and I think Stephen Kenny has taken over this Ireland team at just the right time. And then, of course, as I think a lot of people say, that Ireland are getting Stephen Kenny at just the right time.
Yeah, so we should feel a little bit excited about what we're going to hopefully see. And it's not that...
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not that far away. Yeah, 6 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, Joe, you know as well as I do that 6 weeks, things change. You know, people can get injured or people can come to the fore. We just got to hope that everyone stays as healthy as possible.
We were talking a little bit of this, about this a little bit earlier on. It's also a very exciting time to be a Manchester United fan. When you think back to where we were in September, October, every defeat or bad result against a team who would come and Old Trafford would feel a little bit like a morgue and they'd lose. And it was like, ooh, one more of these defeats is going to be enough for this board to sack Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's like, wow, that team is very exciting.
It does look like it, but we've had a full storm before under Solskjaer, haven't we, when he initially came in. So I think they need to be a little bit reserved. But there's no doubt, looking at that front five, I mean, there's some real quality there. Rashford, of course, is maturing all the time. Martial is getting a consistency to get to his game that we've never really seen before. He's in his best goal-scoring season of his career. But then just add in Mason Greenwood. Now, this is a player that, if you've heard about the players coming through at United, this is a player that they've deemed that he's got real quality. He really has. There's no doubt about it. And initially, when we saw him in pre-season, in all their friendly games, he was playing a lot. And you could see the ability, that ability to cut in on that left-hand side, finish with great quality. Now, we're seeing not only that finishing ability, but we've seen his physicality. He looks like he's put on half a stone of muscle, it seems. He looks strong. He looks powerful. Now, you've got a front three now who are set up to get goals. You think about Rashford playing on the left-hand side, cuts in on his right foot, his strong right foot. Suddenly, the goal opens up. He's a threat. Greenwood on the other side and Martial then at the point. But what you do get is that fluidity of that front three. They're quite flexible. They can all play at the point. They can all drift out wide. Add to that, and which has been the biggest difference for me, is Fernandes in terms of that quality just behind them. I mean, he's been sensational. The difference he has made to that team has been incredible. And they are playing with verve. They are playing in a way that you probably, that stereotype of Manchester United. But the big difference, what he has given them, Bruno, is the fact that they're not one-dimensional now. And they're not just a counter-attacking team. They literally can play through the thirds because of him. And he's a player who can score from distance. We've seen at the weekend that he can run in behind defenders and play ahead of the play. He should have scored when he went 1v1 after that brilliant Martial pass. So this is a player, midfielder, number 10, however you want to describe him, who's got the lot. And these goal-scoring stats that he brought over from Portugal, which were amazing, you're suddenly thinking, well, can you do that in the Premier League? That's the biggest challenge. Well, his assist and goals, he's just continued, and he looks a fabulous signing.
Is part of the reason he's had such an impact just because he has so much confidence himself? Like, I understand that, obviously, from a footballing perspective, he transforms how the team play because all of a sudden, you know, you don't have a kid in there or you don't have somebody whose job is ostensibly to defend and stop. It's actually somebody whose job it is to get forward and be creative. But there's also a sense of like, well, I mean, I'm really good at this. Like, and that didn't really seem to be part of the makeup of this United team.
No, and I think that over the years, certainly since Ferguson's retirement, I think there've been too many Manchester United signings or players who have come through and played for them who don't have that arrogance and in a good way, that confidence, that real inner belief that, yeah, this is my arena, that I belong here. And for him to hit the ground as quick as he did run it, it's fantastic. And he's a top player. There's no doubt about it. And I always reserve judgment and I always think, yeah, listen, I know great stats and scoring in the leagues of Europe or be creative or a really good defender. But I do believe that the Premier League asks you questions that no other league does. And for him to excel as much as he has done so far, it has just been so impressive. And I think that you're seeing now that he gets the ball and those like flying machines up front for United, they just run because that trust is there that he can make that pass. Now, he'll recognise if it's not on, he'll take it and he has that ability then to keep that ball for 4 or 5 seconds to allow those centre forwards or those wide men to spin back and give another option. Whereas before, maybe players in that position were getting robbed and in United were getting counter-attacked. But it does bode well, it really does. And everyone's talking about can they bridge the gap. The goal-scoring form of that front three there, 55 goals this season, Liverpool's front three that we lauded about 51 goals, that won't be the reason they catch up to the top two teams. It won't be. It will be defensively. And there's still a vulnerability about that United back four, still a vulnerability about De Gea, despite the fact that we've normally seen him as a world-class goalkeeper in a way that there isn't with Liverpool. You think about Van Dijk. I know, like, since they've won it, maybe they've looked a little bit off their kind of usual high standards. But look at that chance Grealish gets with a couple of minutes to go. Alisson has had nothing to do and just makes a brilliant save. That's the difference. It's defences, it's goalkeepers who win you the leagues. The forwards and the flair players, the goal scorers, they win you games. Defences and goalkeepers win you leagues.
Is there a situation here where Manchester United take back Dean Henderson and I don't know what the potential signing is. Is it one high-profile centre-back signing on the level of someone like Kalidou Koulibaly? Or is it as simple as that, Gary? Or what way do you see it?
Yeah, I do. I do think that that would be a statement. Whoever gets that centre-half from Napoli, I think that's a massive statement. I've been intrigued to see the way it's going. Initially, it was Liverpool, maybe. And I'm thinking, well, if you put him alongside Van Dijk as well. Bearing in mind, I rate Gomez anyway. And Matip, for that matter. But I do think, yeah, a real top-quality centre-half will make a massive difference to Manchester United. Because even if you think about the goal that they initially concede, the ball comes in the box. It's a routine header for any centre-half with any physicality. We talked about John Egan having that ability to play out. But he's not going to miss that header the way that Lindelof does. He's just not going to do that. And, of course, people say about Maguire getting nutmeg. That's a brilliant piece of skill. That skill and that finish is something that you normally see from the likes of Messi. So I wouldn't be too bothered about that. But, yeah, Henderson's a big decision. It really is, because he's excellent at Sheffield United. There's no doubt about that. But to be then the number one at Manchester United is a completely different step up. So they've got to make a big decision there. But there's no doubt in my mind United are on the right path. But in terms of bridging that gap, they won't be able to do it because it's too big, because defensively they're not good enough. The reason Liverpool were able to do it last season was because they got Van Dijk in. And suddenly, whatever the point total they were behind Manchester City, were able to bridge it to 1 point and in this season go past them. The reason they've done that and the reason why Liverpool are the Premier League champions is because they've signed Van Dijk.
We were talking about back threes there. Arsenal played a back three with your man David Luiz at the heart of it.
Your
clean
man.
Sheet, 90 minutes under the belts, world-class defender all over again. How impressive were they in your view and how sustainable is this? Because they've got some very tough fixtures coming up.
I thought it was a brilliant result because if you think about the form of Wolves and how good they have been, they've probably benefited most from the lockdown break because of how much football they played at the beginning of the season. So they come back energised. So I felt this was a massive test for Arsenal going to Wolves. You think about how few goals Wolves concede, how strong Wolves are in second halves. But if you're saying to me a clean sheet, how impressed were you defensively? No, I wasn't impressed with them, to be perfectly honest. And the reason being, if you think about that first minute, they do one ball, straight ball up from the back. Mustafi goes underneath it. Jimenez takes it down and just passes it on. Kolasinac square. Traore's in on goal. Martinez, the goalkeeper, I must have think four or five occasions he's come out as a sweeper keeper to get him out of trouble. But he wasn't alone there. They go 1-0 up just before halftime. And I'm thinking, OK, second half Wolves are so strong. The majority of their points have come from second half performances. And it was a 10-minute period from about 55 minutes to 65 minutes where Arsenal's defending was absolutely woeful. Traore gets down the right wing, puts a cross into the back post. Mustafi's got Jimenez, and it's a basic movement just to go there, and just to spin off to the back post. Jimenez has got a free header. The saving grace there was Cedric Suarez, who I think is going to be a brilliant signing at right back. Narrows up in a way that you don't normally see Arsenal's fullback and bumps Jimenez. He's looking for a penalty. It's not a penalty, it's good defending. And then it happens again. A simple ball into the box. Jimenez just pulls off the shoulder of Kolasinac. He hasn't a clue where he is. And likewise, 5 minutes later, when you think about Traore going in 1v1, he's 15 yards away from Kolasinac. Kolasinac looks at him. You know he's a flying machine. And he still lets him get in on a straight run where he should score again. So as good as they've been, as good as Arteta is in making sure that he sets his team up to protect against those weaknesses will always be there. And that's why, as impressed as I have been with Arteta, I really have been in terms of how disciplined he has, the shape that he's got his team, that he's not suffering any falls. Those players will just let you down and they will continue to do so.
It's okay though, because he's just got the gig, right? So there's a couple.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Like I wouldn't be as excited if I'm an Arsenal fan as I am if I was a Man United fan, but I would certainly think, we've got somebody here. The not suffering fools, I think, is actually one of the things that maybe Solskjaer isn't getting enough credit for. Just burning people out of the club who were opportunity stoppers or bad around the training ground. And you're seeing it now. Arteta's doing exactly the same thing. Same playbook is like, you're a waster. I don't care that you're my most expensive player. I don't care that every week you're racking up $250,000 in wages. You're not playing for me. And there's a strength for a new manager. There's a bit of strength in that.
I think you need that. I think you need to send a message to the rest of the squad. But the more important one for me was the petulance of Guendouzi, that at 19, 20 years of age, is that he thinks he can just, like, give it the big I am, and he's just not having it. And I don't think that's necessarily just about his character. I think he's ill-disciplined in his positional play as well. I think he runs around and every Arsenal fan thinks, look at him, he's tackling, but he gives up his positional play all the time. Now, if you think about Arteta, in terms of his, excuse me, his skill set as a central midfielder in the Premier League, it was holding that position, giving you that platform with which to play from. All the Arsenal good teams had that. So that's good that he is dismissing him. In terms of that back three, I think probably that's the way to go. I think it negates the area that Luiz has to work in, so he protects him a little bit. But also that back three gives you is three players there because Xhaka, Ceballos don't stay with midfield runners. We've seen that over the years. So with three centre-halves back there, if anyone runs off them from midfield, you'd hope they'd collect them. But in terms of Arteta, yes, it's not. I don't think it can be the same playbook, Jer, as Ollie at Manchester United, because they don't have the financial muscle. You think about Solskjaer, he's been able to get rid of a few people because he's had the ability to go out and buy and get other players in. Arsenal won't be able to do that, so he's going to have to be creative. It's probably why he's promoting youth at the moment. And I think he's going to have to make sure that he creates some wealth by getting rid of some of those high earners and certainly getting rid of the players he may be able to get a fee for, the likes of Lacazette, those type of guys.
Yeah, Owen, exciting times as an Arsenal fan?
Oh, listen, I mean, the sky is the limit. I mean, it may even be a top six finish. Like, truly keeping place in the trophy cabinet now for the sixth place trophy this year, because that's what it is now. Who cares about the top four trophy? All about the top six trophy.
Ah, look, the greatest revolutions start in tiny little rooms and then they grow slowly from there. John White has been in touch on Twitter and says he'd love to see this Ireland team. Darren Randolph and Gold and a back three of Coleman, Duffy and Egan with Doherty and Stevens as the wing-backs, James McCarthy holding Hendrick and Horahan, and then McGoldrick and Long up front. I don't know if McGoldrick is at the tip of a diamond there. Probably that's just the way it's been written down, obviously. I mean, I can see that team having width and our best players are playing, and it makes a lot of sense.
It does, and it's great that we as fans are able to say, well, listen, we've got a few options now. It's not so set in stone that we've only got... We will struggle to get a really competitive 11. Now it looks like we've got players who will be pushing others for those jerseys as well. But yeah, I agree with you. I think certainly Seamus Coleman, in the way that Ancelotti sets up Everton quite often, he is narrowing up as a centre-half, even from a full-back position. You know, we are in and out of position. They seem to go from a three at the back to a four at the back. So Seamus can do that. I've no doubt about that in my mind. I have no doubt that two centre-halves either side of Duffy will play to his strengths because he won't have to be the ball carrier as such. Although he won't shy away from it, but I don't think it's probably one of his strengths. And then you can get your wing-backs in, but listen, it's great. We're supporters, that we can speculate, but I just don't think I don't think we'll play like that. I think the concern certainly with a three at the back, a five at the back, is that we get pinned back, we don't get out. I think on the front foot, Stephen Kenny will want to be dominating those midfield areas, and that's something that's music to our ears, isn't it? Bearing in mind how often over the last few seasons our midfielders just give the ball away. If we can look after that football, it would be great to see.
Yeah, transformative. Gary, great stuff. Great to have you with us this morning. Thanks a million.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Gary.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.